Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show was originally recorded on Friday, May 23rd, 2014. I'm out of town, so I pre-recorded it. But hey, it's fresh to you, and that's all that matters. This is episode 1087. Please enjoy this fine program. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, smartphones, home theater, digital photography, headphones. Headphones are a big category. Well, they've been a big category for a while. It's a very profitable category. As soon as people figured out that you could make a $15 product and sell it for $300, they jumped on the bandwagon. And, well, there are a lot of headphones manufacturers now, and the iPod, of course, and now the iPhone really pushed that along. And lo and behold, this week, and I admit it, I was wrong. I thought it was a bogus rumor, but Apple and Beats by Dre tied the knot. For $3 billion, Apple paying $2.6 billion in cash. Oh, well, that's different. Nothing. I remember they have like $160 billion in cash sitting in the bank, burning a hole in their pockets. And then $400 million in stock, which they will use to tie down the Beats folks. There are 300 Beats employees, but it's probably two that matter. Of course, Dr. Dre, the founder of Beats, a rap star who made his name in the 80s with a group called NWA, became a producer, discovered some of the biggest rap names in rap, including Eminem, Snoop Dogg, and others. But he's always been a very talented, very successful producer, record guy. And about how many years ago now was it? Yeah, maybe 5 years ago, he started Beats with Dre, which was at the time just headphones. He didn't even make the headphones. For the first 5 years, Monster made the headphones. A couple of years ago, they split, and Beats started making its own headphones. My personal opinion of the headphones and I don't wear them all the time, but the ones that I've used, I'm kind of middle of the road, certainly not in price. But, expensive headphones, well, they have a wide range. But I got to say, not the best sounding. I mean, they're equalized, heavily equalized for hip-hop and rap, and they got a big, big, big bass. That even the name Beats kind of implies that, doesn't it? Founded in 2006, so Beats is what? I'm just looking at the Wikipedia entry. That's 7-8 years old now. They've been making their own headphones, though, for a couple of years now. And apparently, some have told me the quality's better. I'll have to give them a try. They also, last year, bought a kind of struggling streaming music service called Moog. You're probably familiar with Spotify and Rhapsody and RDO. And Google has a streaming music service. Pandora's. There's a lot of streaming music services. Moog was kind of in the pack. I liked it. I used it. I thought it was one of the best in terms of quality. Jimmy Iovine, who's named number two of the 300 employees, you should keep track of. Record producer. He has the Interscope label. He put together a deal to buy Moog for not very much money. What was it, $40 million? Not very much money. And turned it into the streaming music service called Beats. Mm. So now we have headphones. We have streaming music. That's their entire product line. Dr. Dre and Jimmy Iovine at the head of the company. And 300 employees, many of whom are devoted to curating music for the stream. This is the thing. They said Beats was going to be different, and you got to be different somehow because everybody has the same 20 million songs. You know, you pay 10 bucks a month. It's all kind of the same. You have an app on your mobile device, or you have a desktop app. You can listen to anything in the library as long as you pay the 10 bucks. Microsoft does this too with Xbox Music. So how do you distinguish yourself, if you're the new guy on the block? Well, Jimmy Iovine, who's the record guy, said, we're going to make it different because it's going to be human-curated content. We're going to make playlists, made by actual humans. Which reminds me a little bit of radio, frankly. we've had that for a while. It's nothing new. I was not overwhelmed by it. The app is beautiful, very nicely done, but so is RDO. So is, in my opinion, Spotify. I use Google Music. Same thing, $20 million songs, $10 a month. And the nice thing about Google, unlike many of these others, Google allows me to upload all my music to Google and add it to the pile. So if I have unusual songs that aren't in that 20 million song set, I can play those back too. So there we have it. Dr. Dre, Jimmy Iovine, a streaming music service that has not really gained a lot of traction. About 250,000 users, quarter of a million users, compared to, in the U.S. only, compared to the 10 million paying users on Spotify, the number one streaming music service. So not a huge success, although it's the youngest of the music services. And then the Beats headphones, very much a big success. I think the last figure I saw for 2013, the revenue for the Beats headphone business was $1.4 billion. And remember, these are high margin, so you could figure more than half of that cash in the pocket. So this is, you know what? If you think of it from a purely financial deal, paying no attention to the brand or anything, it makes sense for Apple to buy Beats, because if they continue to sell them at that rate, they're going to make their money back in a couple of years, 3 years. And then it's all profit from then on. So it's a good business decision. It concerns me, and I didn't buy it for other reasons. It doesn't seem like it fits Apple's model. The headphones aren't particularly good. Apple's really taken pride in making super high quality stuff. Although you could argue the Beats headphones are better than the earbuds that Apple provides with its iPod and iPhone. That would be true. A lot of speculation that it really wasn't about either the streaming music business or the headphone business, but that Apple was interested in Dr. Dre and Jimmy Iovine. In particular, Jimmy Iovine and the contacts he has in the music and maybe even TV and movie biz. He's the consummate Hollywood L.A. macher, you know, gets around, gets things done. I think you could also make a case that Apple's doing it because Jimmy Iovine is a front man. You know, one of the things Apple's missed since Steve Jobs passed away in 2011, they've been a great band, but no front man, no lead singer, no guy to take the spotlight. Tim Cook's okay, but not Mr. Charisma. He's the CEO, but not Mr. Charisma. He's kind of more like, he should be the drummer in the back, you know. Phil Collins, boom, 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 boom. But they need a David Lee Roth. They need a Mick Jagger. Maybe that's the idea. Maybe Dre is, I don't know. Maybe that's the idea. They need somebody up front who can do what Steve did. What was Steve good at? Steve Jobs was a brilliant marketer, a brilliant leader internally. He got people to do things they would never have done for any other company. And a great lead singer. He's the guy up front that everybody... He put on a heck of a show. Can Jimmy Iovine do that? I don't know. Can Dr. Dre do that? Yeah, probably. But Dre has some baggage. You know, he was a gangsta rapper. Some of the things he said and done in his youth, admittedly almost 30 years ago, maybe not, you know, not something to be proud of. I'm sure he's not now. He is hip-hop's first billionaire. Good on you, Dr. Dre. Anyway, okay, I'm going to eat my hat. Not literally. I don't have... They're not very palatable. I won't eat my hat. But I was wrong. I did not believe it. It has happened. And you know what's going to be the most interesting is I think Monday... It's no accident that the news came out, what was it, on Wednesday of this week, because I believe that Monday is a sort of a coming out party. Now, the actual acquisition doesn't clear. It has to get through regulatory hurdles. There won't be any problem there. And then it has to clear and everything, and probably that's not till September. Right around, interestingly enough, the time that Apple introduces its new iPhone, iPad, the new products. Interesting. But I would expect at least Jimmy Iovine to take the stage on Monday during Apple's big keynote. We'll be watching with interest. And I'll, you know, this is Kremlinology. Every word, everything he says, everything Tim Cook says or Eddie Q or Phil Schiller says, we're going to watch with great interest. By the way, you know, even though Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre will not move to Cupertino where Apple's headquartered, they will have offices up there. They will have jobs to do. They will have titles on the business card. Jimmy Iovine's title is Jimmy, and Dr. Dre's title is Dre. So there you go. That's worth $3 billion right there. All right. Let's go to the phones and take your calls. What do you think? 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, I am the tech guy. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And to the phones we go. Scott Wilkinson coming up in a few minutes, our home theater guru. But first, let's say hello to the lovely and talented Heather Harmon, the phone ranger, back from her trips, her gallivanting around the world. Is that a seashell around your neck from the Seychelles, darling?
No, I wish.
It's beautiful.
Just from some little Marin County fair.
You stole it from some mother of pearl. So who should I start with?
Let's start with Lillian in New York.
I know this Lillian. Dr. Mom. Hi, Lillian. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Good to talk to you.
Hi, just calling in. I finally decided, after looking at all these fitness bands that are being floated around, to see if any of them were any good.
You know what? I'm glad you did, because you're a physician, but also a fitness freak. A longtime viewer of the show, I know, because I see you in the chat room all the time. And you have tried, I think you were the one who told me about the Jawbone Up, the very first fitness band I tried. You've tried everything since then.
Right. I have, for the past 2 months, I have worn on one wrist the Up, the Fuel Band. I actually picked up one of the Samsung Gear Fits, and I have a Fitbit clipped to my waistband.
Okay, well, one thing we're going to know is how accurate these are, at least if they agree. The Gear Fit's the one I'm interested in. Did you get the one that's the curved OLED screen?
Yes, I did.
Oh, that's, to me, that's the most attractive looking one.
And the most inaccurate.
Oh, really?
It's all of the bands that you wear on your wrist are inherently inaccurate because they depend on some kind of a formula to differentiate between the arm wave when you're sitting at your desk typing or something,
right,
and the arm swing that you get when you walk. And I wore them all on the same wrist for weeks, and they didn't agree within 500-600 steps of each other.
That's pretty bad. That's 10% or something, right?
Oh, it's absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
Probably the most accurate is the one clipped to my belt because it's measuring, you know, when my body is moving.
Well, almost sounded like you'd be better off getting a traditional belt clipped pedometer, which they're very inexpensive. They don't sync to your phone. They don't get your data up on a website to compete with your friends. But it might be more accurate. My problem with all of these is that I don't just walk or run. When I walk on a treadmill, if I'm not swinging my arms, if I'm holding onto the treadmill, for instance, or doing something on my iPad, it doesn't register his steps. It doesn't register the bicycle, exercise bicycle or rowboat, rowing at all. And I do a lot of Pilates. It doesn't recognize that. In fact, it doesn't recognize weightlifting. In fact, really, it doesn't recognize most of what I do.
No, it really doesn't. About the best I was able to do when using a stationary bike, was I took off all the bands and I clipped into the pedal.
Oh, that's I used to wear my Nike Fuel Band on my ankle. It looked like I was on a home release.
Yeah. These whole things, and the worst of it, as I said, from the point of view of fitness band, is the Samsung Gear Fit, because it supposedly has that heartbeat sensor. Well, guess what? I took it. I was at a resort last week, and every morning before they would feed you breakfast, you had to go on a 3-mile hike in the mountains.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Well, then they gave you breakfast in bed, so it wasn't
boring. Oh, all right. You go get back in bed. Your hike is over. Eat. Get back in bed and eat. Okay, that's kind of a mixed blessing. Yeah, all right, I got it.
Then it says it's too noisy to measure your heartbeat. Your arm is moving too much.
Ugh.
And the ultimate one was you're sweating too much.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm sitting there wearing this thing to see what my heart's doing when I'm working out, I expect to sweat.
That's part of the deal. Well, I got a Basis watch. This is the company that Intel recently bought. And it's it looks a little bit like the Pebble. It's a full-size wristwatch. And it has at least 4 electric contacts on the bottom of it that are on your wrist. It says the same thing, too. Not accurate while working out. It seems that it only works when you're lying still. But still, that gives me a baseline for my heart rate, I guess.
Yeah, they're all fine if you want to sit there and measure your heart rate when you're standing still, but I can do that with 2 fingers on your wrist and a wristwatch.
Oh, you're so old school.
Absolutely. I mean, after doing all this, I've come to the conclusion that, as you said, the best thing is just to get a very inexpensive pendulum-based pedometer if that's what you're looking for. I mean, if you're looking for other things, like one of the perks of the Jawbone Up is you can set it so if you don't move in an hour, it's going to buzz on your wrist.
It's so funny that you should say this, because when I was getting up this morning, I was kind of thinking about this. And I feel like these devices, these wearables, and I'd include now Google Glass and the other wearables, are in the same position that smartphones were before the iPhone came out. That they're, you know, they were okay. You tolerated them, but they weren't great. I remember the BlackBerry and the Nokia E71 and these devices. They were they did what they said they'd do, but you always felt like it's not a completely satisfying experience. And these sound like kind of the same thing. I find the fitness bands useful to just encourage me to take that extra step because I'm trying to reach my goal.
Oh, I agree. The one thing I will tell you about the Samsung Gear Fit is they keep updating the firmware. So over time, they've got the potential to add some more functionality.
Well, that's good. They're committed, I would guess, to this. And then, of course, we're waiting, just as we were when the smartphone industry was in its infancy, we're waiting for Apple to weigh in. Now, Apple did change everything with the iPhone. I don't know if they're going to be able to do the same with wearables. We'll have to wait and see. Apple's wearables will be more than just exercise bands, though. They've hired people to do, basic medical measurement. What can you do, Dr. Mom? What can you do? What can you measure reasonably with a band? You can measure, I guess, heart rate okay, not great. Can you measure blood pressure?
You can if you want to let the band expand on your wrist and cut off the blood flow to your hand.
You mean you have to turn it into a sphygmomanometer, one of those blood pressure cuffs.
The way blood pressure works is it basically listens for turbulence. You blow it up until it cuts off the blood flow. And then as the pressure comes down, you're listening for the noise to come back, which means the blood is going through the vessel.
Oh, that's interesting.
And then for the blood to vanish, noise to vanish, when the turbulence gets below a certain
that's
level.
Really interesting. So blood pressure cuffs are really just microphones.
What you could do is if you wanted to have a sensor, you could measure the blood oxygen level because you can do that across the skin. You can certainly measure the pulse.
Well, oxygen levels is actually a fairly important measurement that we don't typically do, but athletes are very interested in that.
Yeah, that's easy to do with what's called transcutaneous or across the skin. You can measure a heartbeat. You cannot measure what we call the EKG, that test the doctor does, we get the paper, it looks like
right.
Somebody scribbled all over.
You get the sine wave or the sinusoid wave of your heartbeat.
It requires two points of electrical contact that have to be several inches apart.
Could you wear two watches?
You could, but at that point, who wants to, besides somebody ridiculous like me who's walking around.
How many are you wearing? Come on now. Could you wear an earring and a watch, or maybe two earrings? Now, some people have talked a little bit about this idea that maybe earbuds might have some capabilities. If you used your ear, would you be able to do a little bit more up there?
You could. There's no standardization for an EKG measuring from your ear to your wrist.
I see.
I'm sure
a baseline.
I'm sure the formulas can be worked out. Yeah. As a matter of fact, there's a Kickstarter I contributed to where they're going to have Bluetooth earbuds that are wireless that are supposed to measure your pulse and such. I'm not sure how well they're going to work, but I'll see if they actually work.
Kids, Dr. Mom, she really is a doctor. Don't try this at home. There you get it. It sounds like nothing's perfect. Which one are you going to continue to wear?
I think I'm going to stay with the Gear Fit for the one reason. It's not a great fitness band, but it's actually very good for letting me turn off the sound on my phone, seeing phone calls that are coming in, responding to text messages, and things like that.
Thank you, Lillian. Dr. Mom, great to talk to you. Scott Wilkins is coming up next. Thanks for your review. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Okay, bye.
That was great. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson is here. He's the home theater guy. Joins us every week at this time to talk about home theater. Actually, he's about to head out to the... To the. What is
That's
the
right.
The?
The THE show, the home entertainment show. Long-standing audio show. I think they have tried to brand it as more widespread home entertainment, but it's really mostly two-channel audio, audio file stuff, lots of two-channel systems. In a hotel, it's down at the Hilton and the next-door Atrium in Newport Beach, California. And in fact, I'm going to be hanging out at the Atrium pool at the end of the day today, Saturday, at 6 o'clock.
So if you want to come say hi, that's good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Look for Santa Claus in the Tommy Bahama shirt. And you'll find Scott Wilkinson, home theater guru.
Sitting by the pool.
He's also the editor-in-chief of the AVS Forum. I'm surprised that people still listen to two-channel sound. I mean, doesn't everybody have a surround sound system for their TV? And I mean, even for me, that's my stereo now, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right. But
am I giving up quality by having it come through a surround sound system?
Certainly there are those who would make that argument because they're saying, look, if you spend a certain amount of money and you buy two speakers, well, you're probably going to get better quality than if you spend the same amount on five speakers.
That makes sense, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So that does make some sense. But there is a vibrant two-channel audio community that's still out there. I'd say the demographic is older, skews a bit older.
Yeah.
But it's the people who have disposable income, and they're hobbyists, and they love messing around with speakers and preamps and amplifiers and cables and all kinds of stuff. Headphones is a huge, huge market now that there's going to be a ton of them at this show. And there's also a huge resurgence, not even resurgence, in the market for what's called high-resolution audio. And that's going to be all over this show.
So we've talked about this a little bit before in the context of Neil Young's Pono player, which comes out this fall. He raised money for it on Kickstarter, I think.
Right,
I actually bought one, $400. It's like an iPod, but it's high-def audio. And there's some a lot of discussion of whether this even sounds any better.
Correct.
You were talking the other day about the Nyquist theorem.
Yes. And I won't get that geeky this time. What I will say is that we are doing a lot of discussing on AVS Forum about this subject. Can you hear the difference?
Yeah.
Is it really noticeable? And one of the factors that you need to take into account is your audio system capable of reproducing the extra frequencies and the extra dynamic range that high-resolution audio offers? So if most speaker systems, most consumer speaker systems, most consumer amplifiers, AVRs, AV receivers, they can't go up beyond 20 kilohertz. So even if there is a difference that people can hear, you're not going to hear it on most consumer audio systems.
Most people's hearing doesn't go 20 kilohertz.
Well, that's true. And there is a debate about whether or not frequencies above 20 kilohertz can be perceived, not necessarily by hearing.
Ah, that's the key, isn't it?
That's the key. Maybe by some sort of skin response, I've heard some people say.
It just feels more open, and there's an airiness to the sound that you detect. I mean, you feel 20 hertz because it's such a low sound. It's really a rumble, sound. not music. So it makes sense, and maybe there's a tone. Most people's, even young people's hearing doesn't go beyond 15 kilohertz, right? I mean,
well, very young people, maybe 18.
20 is a lot.
I can't hear it. You can't hear it.
I can't hear it. Yeah. Well, you know, we have with that mosquito sound that the kids love to do.
Right. The ringtone that adults can't hear.
Adults can't hear it. Kids can, and I've played it actually on the show, and I regret it deeply because you and I are sitting here going, I don't hear anything, and then and then the people under 20 at home are going, you're killing my ears.
You're
crazy. There's nothing there. No, you can really hear it. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. If your system can reproduce above 20 kilohertz, it could be. One possible effect is that the high harmonics up there above 20 kilohertz actually interfere with each other, and this is a physics process and create what are called difference or interference tones that exist in the audible range, which you wouldn't hear, which they wouldn't be there if your system can't
reproduce
it.
That's kind of my point. And we talk about all this stuff, but audio, it's not pure mass. You're moving air. You're doing things with air. And it's conceivable that there's senses that we don't know are engaged, and it's more than just the math of it, isn't it?
That's exactly right. And so we try to do tests, you know, double blind tests.
That's the only way to do it. It's such a subjective thing.
There was a study done years ago by the Boston Audio Society that tried to be very careful about playing high resolution audio and downsampled versions of the same files to see if people could hear the difference. And the result was they couldn't. The result was random chance. It was basically 50%. Hmm. The problem was that many of those discs that they used, even though they were high-resolution audio, SACDs mostly, the original source material was analog tape from the 70s and 80s.
Didn't have that information anyway.
And they didn't have that information anyway. Yeah. There are also claims that some high purveyors of high-resolution audio are actually upsampling CDs.
Right. I've heard
that. Which means there won't be any additional information in those either.
Well, and also, maybe you're testing with headphones, but in fact, it's a feeling that comes through the air that the headphones can't reproduce. This is a tough thing to measure. You know what my bottom line is going to be? If I could put on those headphones, if I hear or feel a difference, if I enjoy the music more, then I'm even if it's purely a psychological effect, then I'm going to say, I like it better.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one issue is that if you buy an SACD or a high-res version of a file and then or a music, some song, and then you play the CD version, they might have mastered the high-resolution one differently.
We talked about that because I did go to HDTracks.com, and I bought some high-resolution recordings, and I could tell the difference, but maybe it was because it was uncompressed versus MP3 compression. There's so many different things that go in.
There are so many variables. Yeah. I'm trying to, on AVS Forum, I'm actually working on developing some files with Mark Waldrop, who is the president and founder and chief engineer at AIX Records, who specialize in high quality, high resolution audio.
Cool.
I want to develop some files that people can download and see for themselves if they can hear a difference.
That would be fun.
Most people won't be able to because they don't have the system, the capability to play those extra frequencies that are otherwise not available. But, you know, it's what the heck. It's not a scientific experiment. It's just something fun for the community to do, I think.
You know what I honor? I honor people who want to make, who love music and they want to make it sound as good as it possibly can because they love it more and they enjoy it more. And if somebody wants to spend $100,000 on a stereo system in their house, if they want to buy high definition files, whatever it is, if it floats your boat, they think that's great. Music is wonderful. And of course,
we
all agree the best way to listen to music is in a live performance, as close to the musicians as you can. But we don't always have that luxury.
Well, that's why I don't count myself a true audiophile, because no matter how much money I spend on a reproduction system, recorded music isn't going to sound the same as live. And I am, as a musician myself, I prefer to go out and hear a live concert. Yeah. And there's just no comparison.
So that's what we should all do. We should all go see more live concerts.
Well,
and spend less on our stereo system. Spend that money on tickets to see a show. Although nowadays you go to a rock show with all the amplification, you may be hearing the same junk that you would be hearing at home.
You know, that's a very good point. Amplified music is a different story.
Go to a symphony and sit there next to the first fiddle.
Chamber music. I love it.
Scott Wilkinson. You'll find him at the AVS Forum, avsforum.com, and host of our Home Theater Geeks podcast where they talk about this kind of stuff kind of obsessively. It's twit.tv/HTG. You'll be filling in for me on the 4th of July weekend. I'm looking forward to that. Thank you, Scott. We'll see you next time.
Betcha.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back to the phones we go. And let's see who's on the line here at 8888 Ask Leo. It's Avery in Tecumseh, Michigan. Is that right, Avery?
Yep. Hey, Leo.
Hey, Avery. How are you? Thank you.
Before I start, I wanted to tell you that I've been using Squarespace for a long time now, and I love it. It works really well.
That's your website? Okay. Now, for that, you get a plug for your website. What's the website?
AveryMiller.org.
AveryMiller.org. And what do you talk about on AveryMiller.org?
I do some podcasting on it and some blogging and some other stuff, I guess. So,
how old are you, Avery?
12.
You're getting a good start on the future.
Thank you.
You know, I actually tell kids, and by kids I mean anybody under 21, that this is a really good time for you to start putting your best foot forward on the internet. Because what would happen, Avery, if, you know, you're 16, you've never put anything on the internet, you don't have a website, you don't have anything, a Twitter, a Facebook, an Instagram, or anything, and somebody takes a picture of you doing something dopey and posts it, it's the only search result for Avery Miller.
Exactly.
And you don't want that to be your only ticket to fame. So the best thing for anybody, actually it's for every adult too, is make a website. Squarespace is a great place. I'm glad that you like that. But it doesn't have to be Squarespace. There's free places like WordPress.com, Blogger.com. Make a website. Start posting a little bit on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. Get other friends with websites to link to your website. Do you do that, Avery?
Yeah.
And I see you post on Google Plus, too. That's good.
Yeah.
All of that's great. And then start putting up, like, you know, your school paper that you did really well, or if you got an award or you're in a local newspaper, put that on the site, too, because the more you do that, the more likely that's what people will see when they search for you, including colleges and future employers. You really want to do that.
Yeah.
You're smart. You're smart, Avery. So what can I do to help you?
So I'm wondering what you think about Google's Project Aura, the cell phone they're making. And I also wondered how to get started with ham radio.
Okay. So Project Aura was something that Google kept when it sold off the Motorola phone division. And it was their kind of blue sky research division. And you're right. The phone that they have shown, if you go to Project Aura, ARA.com, you'll see it, is a modular phone, which means you can buy just the stuff you need. If you don't need an FM radio, why put it in there? And if you don't need, you know, I don't know what else you might not need, a camera, or you want a better camera, you could put a better camera in there, that kind of thing. I think it's interesting. They have released a developer's kit, which is cool, so that other people can make Aura modules. This is exactly the kind of thing you do blue sky research with. You don't. It's something not obvious, not necessarily even that there's a market for, but as a way of just kind of seeing what kind of market there might be or what kind of things you could do. I personally don't want a phone that falls apart in my pocket. So most of the phones I see do exactly what I want them to do. I mean, there's a few things. Like, I just got this Firefox phone, and it has many of the features I want, but it also has an FM radio because I think that's very important in developing
that's
nations.
That's cool.
Yeah, but I don't want it. But am I going to not buy it because it has an FM radio? No, because it doesn't add appreciably to the cost. So yeah. I feel like it's great. I'm glad Google's doing it and doing the experiment. I don't know if it's going to take off, but we'll pay attention to it. Some things like self-driving cars I know are going to happen, even though there are lots of problems. Modular phone, not so. We've seen that before. You know, Visor did this. You're too young. But they made springboard modules for their Visor. It was a Palm Pilot, basically. It was a PDA. And you could add a phone module, or you could add a fax module, or you could add, you know, a variety of different modules into it.
Yeah, I've never heard of that.
Yeah, it's inevitably clunky, because in order to snap these things together, you're going to make it more clunky. Now, how do you become a ham? Well, there are lots of ways. Being a ham is a great idea for a 12-year-old. I think it's wonderful. It's a hobby, good hobby for anybody. But you'll also learn a lot about electronics. Your first license is the technician's license, and it's very easy to get. My suggestion is you get, and this is how I learned, Gordon West publishes a book that makes it very, very easy. That is GordonWestRadioschool.com. I highly recommend it. He's the host of our Ham Nation show. That's another way to learn a little bit about ham culture and what hams are like. But here they have classes, an event schedule, instructors, but also a link to his training resources, which are available from W5YI. And I use the technician class manual. He updates that for the exam each year. The new year is almost over. The new year begins July 1st, so you might wait till the July 1st book comes out. And then you can also get it on audio CD if you want. That I did that so I could listen as I drive around. And everything I needed, I learned there. And then after you do that, then it's general. And then after general, it's extra. And he has courseware for all of that. You'll also, if you look online, there are practice tests. I actually put a practice test on my Android phone. And it was a great way for me to prepare for the real thing. Truth is, it's not hard. You don't have to learn Morse code anymore. You can go out and get an inexpensive FM dual band radio that will allow you to talk to hams in your neighborhood, but also use services like Echolink to talk around the world. It really is a great little hobby. I think it's a wonderful thing to know. And I strongly encourage you to pursue it, Avery. I think that's great. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, Sean in Durango, Colorado. You're next. Hi, Sean.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome.
Thank you. I have a question about 5.1 speaker surround sound systems.
All right.
I was wondering if it's a bad idea to get all the satellite speakers in a wireless format.
Yeah, I don't blame you. And there are some solutions. It's not a bad idea. It's just not a it will work less well because you get interference and so forth. But for many people, it's the only way they're going to, particularly because of the spousal acceptance factor. You know, I actually had to hire somebody because I wanted surround speakers to go under the house through the crawl space, down from my stereo system under the house, and then come back up in through the wall. It was expensive. If you're building a house, not such a big deal. But if you're doing it after the fact, wiring surround speakers in particular is tricky. The center, left, right, and subwoofer are all pretty close to the stereo receiver and the TV. So that's less of a big deal, the wires there. It's usually the surround speakers that are the issue. And there are wireless surrounds that, so you don't compromise on the main sound, the sub, the left, right channel, the center. You just get the wireless surround. And that's okay if they're not quite as great, right?
Mm-hmm. So, is there anyone you could recommend that just has the rear surrounds that are wireless and the rest of them that are wired?
That's a great question. You know, Scott has recommended in the past these Pioneer 5.1 systems, and I think that the surrounds might be wireless. These are really nice. They're very affordable. Mark Lang designed them. And they're surprisingly, you know, they're under $500 for all of the speakers and the, I think, the amp as well. Is Mark, I can't remember. Let me find the name for you. I forget it every single time. The chat room knows, though, because I think a few of them have purchased them. I don't know if they're wireless in the back ones. A lot of them, I think, are. A lot of them are, and that is really a good way to go. Because a surround is where you don't want the speaker wire to go from your TV all the way to your left and right side. That's going to go across the room. That's less than ideal. So let me just hang on the line, or keep listening, rather. Andrew Jones, that's it. Thank you. Thank you, chat room, to the rescue, and apparently my studio manager, too.
Yeah, one concern I have about Pioneer is that I heard you mention the other week that Pioneer was getting out of that industry.
They're getting out of plasma.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if they're getting out of this. $549 for the SP-PK52FS. That's the top-of-the-line 5.1 surround. It includes floor-standing speakers, bookshelf speakers, center channel, powered subwoofer. Don't know if it's wireless. Doesn't look like it's wireless in the back ones. That's too bad. Mm-hmm. That's what we really want. These are supposedly, just for that price, a remarkable set of surrounds. Pioneer probably offers a wireless surround. I've used, and I don't recommend, wireless subsystems, and I've never was able to get them working quite right. Hang on the line. We got to take a break for news at the top of the hour. After the news, we'll find something for you, I bet you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Good day to you. Hour two of the Tech Guy radio program. Talking high tech with you at 8888 Ask Leo. The website, when I mention something, the website will always have a link, more information. In fact, after the fact, audio and video from the show too, the full show, all free, no subscription necessary. That website is techguylabs.com. Before the break, we were talking with Sean and Durango about a wireless surround sound. I'm not a fan of having your whole 5.1 speaker system be wireless. And it's less important because the left and right channels and the center channel are all right around the TV. You don't need to be wireless there. The subwoofer, maybe you want wireless, although I put the sub right next to it all because the low frequency stuff, your ear doesn't determine the direction very well. So the sub can be almost anywhere. So I think wires are less of an issue with the subwoofer. It's the surround speakers that are the biggest problem. They need to be positioned right about ear level, just at or slightly behind where your ears will be as you're watching your TV. Not in the back of the room, really on the sides of the room. But nevertheless, getting speakers there means usually running wire, and you'd either have to, maybe you could put it under the carpet. It's challenging. And as I mentioned to Sean, I actually paid somebody to run wire under the wall. There are wireless solutions. In fact, here's one that's excellent from Polk Audio. They do very good speakers in general. And they make surround speakers, $200 each. So they're not cheap, but they're wireless. And because it's from Polk, these would be not only excellent speakers, but they should be very good wireless capabilities. So there are probably a number of companies that make something like this, where just the surround speakers are wireless. Now, Beatmaster says your surround speakers should be 3 feet above your ears. I heard that, but maybe. I don't know. I'm sure that you can find a setup diagram somewhere. If they do need to be that high, then I screwed up, and I'm going to get the guy to come back and put another hole in the wall. Let's go back to the phones. In New York, Sam is on the line. Hi, Sam.
Hi, Leo. Long time, first time.
Hey, I'm glad you found us. Welcome.
Thanks. Actually, I did get to meet you on your last visit to NYC.
I love New York. Were you the guy sitting at the Starbucks working across the street from Regis and Kelly?
No, I actually had brunch with you and Lisa and Dick.
Oh, yeah, I remember you, Sean. All right. I'm not Sean.
Sam.
Yeah, that's it. Sam, yeah, I remember you, Sam. And Dr. Mom was there.
Yes, indeed.
So it's the whole family now. That was fun. Wasn't that fun?
Indeed. My quick question for you is about social media sites.
Yeah.
I'm just starting a small business, and I want to know how many social media sites does somebody need to be on? I've seen so many different styles, LinkedIn, Twitter, Google.
I know.
Et cetera. And which ones are the best ones to be on?
That actually is a great question. And the answer really depends a little bit on who you're talking to. But it's kind of the same question of where do I buy my advertising? Where do I put out my business card? You're going to want to go wherever your customers will be. Now, I'm of the opinion that if you want to do business and you don't have a website, you're really missing the boat, because you at least need a website that you own. Because I know whenever I'm going to do business with anybody, I don't care if it's a gardener, a dentist, a furniture store, I am going to look online just to see what their website looks like, to see if they're serious, to see how long they've been around.
Right.
That's important. So at the very least, you should have a brochure website. And frankly, if you really want to use the internet to build a business, what's your business?
It'll be aerial photography.
Oh, I love that. Well, you need a website. That's where your pictures are going to be.
Indeed.
Yeah. So that's for sure true. But even if you were a restaurant, or I think having a website where you put more content there every once in a while. So it's not a Cobb website. It's a site that's vital. If you're a contractor, have your contractor letter of the week. You've seen realtors do this. I get email from a bunch of realtors. Yeah, hey, you know, why it's time to refinance or whatever. It's just a way of kind of putting new, fresh content on there. So do that. Now, once you have the website, this makes the social media part much easier, because it can link back to your website where there's a lot of content. So it's driving traffic to your brochure, in effect, right? And Facebook probably is always going to be number one for real people. Facebook is not where the geeks might gather. In fact, we geeks like to make fun of it. But the real people are there.
Okay.
And I think having a Facebook presence is great. This isn't going to apply to you, but if customer service is part of your business, you got to monitor Twitter for complaints, if nothing else. You probably should have a customer service Twitter account. And you know the big guys all do this now. That was the only way to get any service from Comcast at all for a long time, is to tweet about it.
I was wondering about Twitter having like two different accounts, one as a broadcast and one as a community type.
Not a bad idea. The more accounts you have, the more you dilute your presence, though. So only have extra accounts if it really makes sense. Like, I'm going to put stuff in one account. For instance, I have two accounts. I have my Leo Laporte account, which is my personal tweet account. But then I also use Twitter to collate links of stories I want to talk about on the show. And that's called Links for Twit. Twit's my company name. And that is a very different kind of feed from the Leo Laporte feed. So that's why I have two. So if there is a really big difference between the content you're going to be putting out, then maybe you should have two feeds. But remember, it makes it a little complicated. People tend to follow one of the two. So I see a lot of companies that have, for instance, T-Mobile, I think, is a good example. T-Mobile, if you search for T-Mobile, they have a lot of accounts. They have a T-Mobile USA account and a T-Mobile account. What's the difference? I don't know. They have a account for their CEO, John Ledger. That's one you're going to follow, because he's a crazy guy and he posts weird stuff all the time. So you're going to follow that one. But they also have a T-Mobile customer service account. See, to me, that's too many. Because I went there, well, which one do I follow? I'm going to follow John, yeah, because I know it's a person. It's always interesting to follow a person. So if you're going to do, you know, if you're an aerial photography guy, have an account that's you. That's you. That's your, and okay. that you post pictures from time to time. Now, there are many examples on Twitter of people, for instance, there's a New York City feed, New York City photo feed on Twitter, that's just a student. It was a, she was a college student, and she just, she loved the city. She kept posting pictures of New York. New York came to, went to her and said, can we pay you to do this? You're the best thing ever for New York City. In fact, she recently, she's traveling, and so she's got pictures of other cities, and it's like, I don't know if she, that's, it's a little weird. But that's an example of, and I think if you did aerial photography, you should probably have an aerial photography account because that could generate a lot of traffic where you put smaller images of your aerial photography. I think that's a great idea.
So, Instagram would be fine.
Instagram too. Yep. Johnny Jets on Instagram. He tweets and he has a website. He also does Facebook. Those are the big four. LinkedIn's more for business contacts, like for job hunting, that kind of thing. I'm not sure LinkedIn would help sell your aerial photography particularly. Google Plus is a great place for photographs. There's some question about whether anybody who doesn't work at Google visits. I happen to use Google Plus like crazy. I love it. So, and it's, and it, it, of all the sites we just mentioned, it's, it shows your photos the best. So maybe you'll want a Google Plus page too, but I, you know, you see how this gets more and more complicated.
Exactly. That's why I was hoping to limit it down. Yeah. Do I need an Instagram and a Vine?
No, I wouldn't do a Vine. I would stay away from the Vine. The kids like the Vine. I don't think you need Vine unless you're doing video. Instagram's great. Facebook's great. Twitter's great. Google Plus, maybe or maybe not. But really, I do want to emphasize, you got it all has to start from your website because that's the thing you own. That's the thing you want people to go back to. That's where people call you and order your service, where they see your images, that kind of thing. It's really important. It's, it all starts with a personal website, in my opinion. And that personal website, by the way, you know, should be samsaerialphotos.com or something. Some, your name, your business.
Right. I the name and business or just the business?
Well, what is the name?
Right, because I did go to Hover recently, and I did purchase the business name.
Which is?
Pardon?
What is it? Give us a plug.
Aerial Videos LI.
Oh, it is video. Okay, then you might want to do Vine.
Oh, okay.
Is it only of Long Island?
Well, that's where I'm based out of.
Oh, okay. Aerial Videos LI. All right, we'll follow you. Yeah, make that your Twitter handle and your Facebook handle, too. That's the other thing. Make it easy for people to follow you. I use Leo Laporte everywhere. I could get Leo in some places, but I don't. I got Leo Laporte because that's who I am. Hey, good luck, Sam. Aerial Photos LI. I love Aerial Videos LI. I love it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back to the phones we go. So many callers. Jeff in Seattle, you're next. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for what you do. I'm a real fan of the Twit Network.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So I have a bit of a mystery to me. I may not be smart enough to figure this out, but so I might have compromised my Microsoft ID through my phone. So I have a Windows phone. It's an old Lumia 900. It's set up as a Go phone. And so one day I'm out getting some fast food, drive up through the line, and the phone connects to an open Wi-Fi connection there at the fast food place. And I can hear it download mail.
Oh.
That's how I know that it connected. And,
And it did it without your permission.
Yeah, exactly. And I get anything in the settings to prevent that. So when I go home, my laptop is telling me that there is an unauthorized login from Austin, Texas. And, you know, I'm north of Seattle. So, you know, immediately changed the password, of course. But I don't understand what happened and how to prevent it. You know, I go through my settings. All I can find is notify me when Wi-Fi networks are available. And, you know, the Microsoft ID is really important, so...
Yeah, I don't blame you.
I can't
So I do remember, and I'm trying to remember what phone it was, seeing a convenience feature that it would automatically just log you onto Wi-Fi's wherever you go. And I'm trying to remember where I saw that. Maybe it was the most recent phone I could figure it was a Nokia 1520 Windows phone. It might be a feature of Windows Phone, this auto login. And maybe it's a feature of your carrier as opposed to the phone itself. But
yeah, it's an AT&T phone, if that makes any difference.
Yeah. I wonder if the chat room. Yeah. Actually, well, yes, it does make a difference. Okay, now AT&T phones all do this. when they see an AT&T sponsored access point.
Ooh.
And I bet you that's what the restaurant or the drive-thru was using. They'll automatically connect. That's frustrating. Now,
might be coincidence, but
I'm hoping it's coincidence, because if it does that, if it does this automatic connect thing, it would be really important that it be using protected transmissions, that your stuff not be flying through the air,
right,
in the clear. So the app that you use for email on your phone is the Windows Mail app?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. And it was connecting to Outlook.com.
Correct.
Then you're fine. I'm almost certain to 99.9% that's SSL, that's encrypted.
Mm-hmm.
And anything that's encrypted, any login or email transaction that's encrypted, is not available to the bad guy. So I think you're okay.
So I'm just stuck with AT&T Open Wi-Fi Spy.
I think you can also turn that off, but it may be in an AT&T app.
Ah.
Look in the AT&T apps. Somebody's saying turn off Ask to Join. I don't think it's that, though. I think, as I remember, it just auto-joins any company Wi-Fi access point. Which
right.
Is,
there is no Ask to Join. There's only a Notify Me when new networks are found. And I went back and replicated the circumstances, and that didn't really help at all.
It is. It's being confirmed. It is part of Windows Phone, this automatically connect to open Wi-Fi hotspots. And that is a setting, and you can turn that off, and you must turn that off. I think that's a terrible idea. That's one of the first things I did.
All right. Well, thank you, Leo.
Yeah, that's a terrible idea. Now, I don't think your ID was compromised if it was just getting email. So it might have been compromised in some other way. But if you're just logging in with the Windows Phone app to Microsoft Outlook, I'd have to somebody check for me in the chat room or somewhere. Have to assume, I'm pretty sure that's SSL. Let me just go right now to live.com and check my email, and I'll tell you, at least on the web. Yeah, that's SSL. So that wouldn't be how it could have leaked out. It's a really bad, when I first saw this, and I do remember now, and I saw it on the Windows Phone 1520. It might be part of 8.1. I think it is. I thought, boy, this is a terrible idea. Auto connect to any open hotspot you see? Really? Really? You think that's a good thing? And maybe there's security involved. I'm sure there might, I'm sure there might be. But boy, that's a convenience. I would much rather choose which access points I log into than have it do it automatically. And I don't think there's any way that having joined this access point, they could get your Outlook ID, your Microsoft ID. So I think you're probably all right. You did the right thing changing it. And it actually is very good advice to periodically, like every month or so, I know it's a pain, but every month or so, change your email logins. Especially, you have one account that's your main account. The account that you use, here's how you know it's your main account. It's the account you use when a site says, hey, if you forget your password, what should I email? What account should I email? It's very often on most sites, it's your login email. That is your most important email address. That's the one that if the bad guy gets access to, everything is off, because all he does is he goes around to sites and say, hey, I'm Leo at techguylabs.com. I forgot my password. Would you mail that to me? Would you send me that password reset? You've had that happen, right? And you click the link, it takes you right to the site and says, what's your new password? And you give it a new password, and that's it. You don't want a bad guy to have that kind of capability. So your main account, the one you use to log in to services, make sure that one's locked down. Change that password regularly. Think about this. This is the scenario. You got hacked. Bad guy figured out what your email password was, but never did anything about it. Just every week he goes and collects all your email. You wouldn't know this. Goes and looks. Let me see what you got. See if there's anything of interest, any password resets or anything. And you'd never know. You would never know. Yeah, this is, I'm looking now at an article on Windows Phone Central. This is a new feature of Windows Phone 8.1. I remember when I saw it, I was like, what? It auto turns on Wi-Fi. So it's in your Wi-Fi settings. You can go there, and it's called Wi-Fi Sense. No, that's not it. No, that's not it. There is a setting. I don't know where it is. Wi-Fi Sense actually saves you battery life. That's not it. But it is something in Windows 8.1. I remember it getting turned on, and I thought, that's not. I was not turned on. I was turned off. That's not a good thing. And then there is the AT&T thing, which is a similar thing where, you're on a, you know, you have an AT&T account. Look at it as a convenience. We're going to give you automatic login to our AT&T hotspots. Isn't that nice? Aren't we nice? And, of course, the benefit to them is you're not using your wireless data, which is scarce. You're using their plentiful landline data. Aren't we nice? Worries me a little bit when I see companies do this and not think about the overall consequences. All right, we're going to take a break. TechGuyLabs.com. I tell you what, if you know where to go in Windows Phone 8.1 to turn that off, go to the Tech Guy Labs site, go to this question, and add it in the comments, would you? That'd be a great help to all of us. More of your calls right after this. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That music you hear, I hope, is the theme to the I don't hear it, so I hope it is the theme to Johnny Jett, our travel guru, who today is celebrating, it's a wonderful thing, his 50th birthday. Congratulations.
Yeah, Johnny. What are you talking about?
Oh, no, I'm just teasing. It is your birthday, though, isn't it?
It is
happy,
my birthday.
Happy birthday.
I still got a long time.
Let me guess. I would say 36.
No.
40.
45.
Oh, that's a good age. That's halfway to 90, Johnny. That's a good age.
I was with my daddy, and he just said today, he's like, man, you're 45?
I know. Think how old that makes him feel.
He goes, in 5 years, you're going to be 50. I go, in 5 years, you're going to be 90.
Your dad, I love your dad. And, you know, the relationship that you and your dad have is so sweet. You take him traveling. Where did you go? You went on a cruise with him recently, right?
Yep. We just went to Barcelona, France, Monaco, Italy. We went to where his parents came from, the island of Ischia, which was beautiful.
Had he ever been there before?
He has. Not many times. But Ischia is a great tip, by the way, for travelers because most Americans go to Capri, which is the island next door.
Very famous. The Blue Lagoon and all of that.
Yeah, the Blue Grotto,
Ischia, is that it?
Correct.
Ischia.
Ischia is three times larger than Capri, and it's half the price. So I was getting these pizzas that cost €3, which is under $5.
Wow. Because nobody goes there. They want to get everybody from Capri.
They do go there. They have actually, Ischia has 300,000 hotel beds, while Ischia has like 13,000. So it's cheaper, but a lot of people go there. It's mostly Germans and Russians, not a lot of Americans. So not everyone speaks English, which I like when I travel.
Yeah, because you know you're in a foreign land.
Exactly.
It is a volcanic island in the Tyrrhenian Sea lying at the northern end of the Gulf of Naples. So is it like going to Napoli? Is it like it's southern Italy?
You have to go to Naples. So, yeah. We take the train down to Napoli. And actually, a good tip is to – if you're going to buy Italian trains, you know, unless you're going to be on a lot of trains, you get a rail pass. But, you know, you don't need to go to Rail Europe if you're just buying like a point to point like we did.
Yeah.
And go to Trenitalia, TrenItalia.com. You click the British flag in the upper right hand corner. It's all in English. And it's just really simple to buy a ticket. And they email you the confirmation. And all you need on those trains is a PNR number. But you need to book them in advance, and you need to get advanced seat assignments. But taking a train is very easy.
I think like most Americans, because we don't have train travel here anymore, not very much, we're nervous about it. And traveling by train is so commonplace in Europe. It's how most Europeans will end up traveling. And it's a wonderful experience.
I'd much rather take the train in Europe than fly.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, let's say you're going London to Paris. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to fly. You have to go to the airport so early, go through security. When you can get on the train, it will take you 2 hours and 20 minutes to go on a tunnel, and you go from city center to city center.
Right.
So there's no dealing with taxis or getting in. So anyway, and speaking of our trip to Europe, by the way,
yeah,
you know, my dad is 85. And so people are like, you can't buy travel insurance for him. He's too old. And I said, that's not true. So a great website I recommend is insuremytrip.com.
Insure,
so they're
kind
of like the Hayek of insurance. So they don't sell you insurance. They just tell you which one's the best one. They actually have 28 different providers. So I put in all the information, how much our tickets cost, how old my dad is, where we're going. So when you're going on a cruise, by the way, you put in the first port. You don't
see,
have to put
I
in all
bought,
the
for instance, on the cruise, I bought their insurance, and it was very expensive. And it's trip insurance. It's
never want to buy.
Yeah.
This is
so if you cancel, you get your money back, right? That's what this is.
Well, no, well, for that, and you definitely don't want to do that because if that cruise went out of business, you would be out of luck.
Oh.
So you always got to go through a third party.
Oh. But you're getting insurance. Is it medical insurance? Well, I mean, what kind of insurance are you getting here?
Well, I bought medical for my dad, health insurance. So, you know, in case, God forbid, anything happened or he got hurt.
Right.
So, and it ended up only costing me $106 for the 10-day or 12-day trip. And I was covered with $350,000 worth of medical evacuation. So
that's,
you know,
great. You get a helicopter and get them out of there. Yeah.
You're smart to
do that, I think. Yeah.
For $106, I don't buy insurance usually for myself. But I do actually, have flight evacuation.
Well, you're getting old now, John. I think it's time to start thinking about it.
Well, you know, now that my birthday just hit, my insurance went up $100.
You've crossed that line. You're in no man's land now, Mr. Jet.
But, you know, having insurance is a peace of mind. So I do recommend it.
Well, especially evacuation insurance. I think if you're going to be somewhere where you're not, where you don't trust the medical treatment, if you're in Europe, I think you're going to get good medical care. But there are places you can go, obviously, where you want to get the heck out of there. If you have a heart attack or you need, you know, some serious medical care, and having evacuation insurance sounds like a very good idea.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
They chopper you to a civilization, basically, right?
They do.
Yes.
Some of them will take you to whatever hospital you want to go to.
Wow.
And, you know, or they'll take you in an air ambulance, which could cost $150,000.
Yikes.
You have to pay out of your pocket.
Yikes.
So that's why having insurance for $100 or $200, whatever it's going to cost you, is worth it.
Now, most boats have a doctor on the boat.
They do, and it does cost money to go visit the doctor.
Right. So if you get seasick or, you know, the flu, that's, you're covered there.
And by the way, if you get sick on a cruise, if you, you know,
lock you in your room,
they ask before you get on the ship if
right.
you're sick or anything, because
right.
they will lock you in the room, as
yeah.
you just said.
Yeah.
They'll put a guard by the,
yeah,
by the door.
Cause they don't want you to get everybody else sick. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
It's actually a cabin, not a room. Let me correct that before.
Pardon me. That makes it so much better. Oh, I'm going to be locked in my cabin. Well, never mind. That's fine.
So last week I ragged on San Francisco, or a couple of weeks ago, San Francisco Airport, about them doing all kinds of construction and to be aware of it. And also Newark Airport, be careful of this summer. Well, now LAX just came out. They're going to be doing they're doing a big project, which is going to last till 2016. But this is more for driving to the airport and dealing with the traffic. So they came out with a website, which I like. And it's called laxishappening.com.
Yeah, LAX is not happening. Now. Okay.
Well, you know, they have a really nice spin on it.
Yeah,
they?
That's a spin. Yeah.
This is all
happening, man. You can't get anywhere.
They're doing a curbside appeal project, which they're really replacing the earthquake pads on the pillars, which is going to take a lot of time.
Oh.
But the tip is, which I like about their website, if you scroll down into the PDF.
Wait a minute. I love this. LAX is undergoing an amazing transformation.
Yeah.
Scroll down. Where should I go?
Actually, you have to hit the PDF. There's a PDF form.
Okay.
But it gives you some tips, which I like, which are really good tips that people should know about, such as do the opposite. So let's say you're dropping someone off at the airport, or you're picking someone up at the airport, and you know, usually the arrivals just packed.
Yeah.
So go to departures and have them meet you up there.
It's opposite day. I'm arriving, but meet me at departures.
All you got to do is, you know, take the elevator or go down the escalator. And I do that all the time. So, and when I have people pick me up, I'll have them pick me up at departures or if it's
or
departures.
go to Burbank.
Is crowded, I'll go to Arrivals.
Take John Wayne. Burbank,
or Long Beach is even better. Yeah. But those are usually more expensive, and they don't go everywhere like LAX does.
So now we've learned just from the last few weeks that Newark Airport is undergoing renovations. They're shutting two runways at SFO, and now LAX is fixing the pads under the columns.
Well, and they're doing more than that. It's just not, that's just one.
And it's gonna. So is there any? I mean, it sounds like you shouldn't go anywhere this summer. Just stay home or go to Ischia by the train.
No, the moral of the story is to be patient and arrive early
and be prepared.
And you should travel. But you can avoid some of these airports.
And before you travel, you should go to johnnyjet.com or follow Johnny Jet on Twitter, because he will lead you in the direction of righteousness and happy birthdays. Happy birthday. Happy birthday, Johnny. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo the phone number, our website, Tech Guy Labs. .com. Our thanks to Nathan Staten, our musical director, playing those fine tunes. And, of course, Heather Hammond, the phone ranger, answering your calls. Moving on to Jay. He's in, wow, I don't even know how to say this. Jay, how do you say it? Malvane, Kansas.
Hey, Leo, it's Malvane.
Well, it's good to talk to you. What can I do for you today?
Hey, Leo, I'm a broke Mac geek. I've been with Macs as my Mac Classic in 1989.
Oh, wow.
But now I've got five children aged 9 to 19.
Oh,
it's kind of expensive to Apple everybody with that.
Yeah.
And so what we've done is we've given some of the kids here at home Chromebooks.
I think a great choice for kids.
Partly because there is a Mac, an iMac in the living room, so if there's anything they need for a little heavier lifting.
Perfect.
Especially printing. Printing seems to be a little problematic on that original Chromebook that we got, that original little 11-inch Samsung. So my daughter's going off to college next year, and she's not going to have another computer in the house to back her up in the dorms. She's going to kind of be on her own. So we're thinking, do we go with a real low-spec MacBook Air? Which is really what she wants, because the kids all going to college want a MacBook.
Yeah, the new base model, they dropped the price $100. It's $899.
And then there's education discounts.
Yeah, 10% off of that. Yeah. I think that's a very... When you're talking $800 for a MacBook Air, now it's an 11-inch, but I think for a student, that's a perfect choice. It's very light, very small. I think that's actually a great choice.
Yeah, I see that they've got these new Chromebook 2s that are supposed to come out any day now, including that Samsung one with the faux leather top.
I was so skeptical about Chromebooks when they first came out. I thought, why would you spend money on a computer that's nothing more than a glorified browser? But what's happened over time is, first of all, we can do more and more with our browser. And if you live in the Google Docs world, and it sounds like your kids kind of do, where they use, you know, Google spreadsheets, presentations, word processors, they use Gmail for their mail. A Chromebook is actually a really good choice. It does all the stuff. It does mail. It does surfing. You can, add Chrome extensions to do almost anything. I can't think of a whole lot of things a student would want to do.
If she goes Chromebook, she doesn't have an iTunes library.
No. Here's what you do, though. Before you leave, you upload everything to Google Music.
Oh, okay.
You can do that. There's a plug-in for your Mac. I presume all the music's accessible to the iMac in the living room, right?
Right.
So you run the, and you have plenty of time to do this. It'll take, maybe it depends how much music you have, but it'll take a little time, a few days. But you run that Google Music. This is free, by the way, Google Music. And I think you can put 25,000 songs on there. She'll have access to all those songs on her Chromebook. Okay. Not storing them, which is fine, but streaming them. And I presume she will have internet access in her new...
The college has Wi-Fi everywhere.
Yeah. And they don't mind.
I did a speedtest.net on it when we were doing our visit, and it was 14.
Perfect. So, plenty.
Yeah, that'll work.
Plenty, yeah. So that would actually be a great music solution for her. If you wanted to really be a generous dad, and with five kids you may not, but for $10 a month, she can have a Google Play Music account that gives her access to all 20 million songs, plus radio. And I mean, it is a musical solution. Maybe she gets a job at the at the campus sweet shop, and she pays for it.
Right. These new Chromebook 2s are due out any day now.
Yeah, they're nice.
They got four. My oldest son has the original Chromebook 11-inch, tiny plastic one.
Yeah, these new ones are better. Yeah.
It really has memory issues. He can't open up more than about 3 or 4 tabs, but he just learns to live with that.
These have more RAM. They have 2 gigs of RAM.
I think it's 4.
4? Well, even better.
Okay.
Even better. Yeah, you're not going to have any trouble. And these are faster processors. They're a little more expensive. This is what I always thought Google should do. It's good to have a $200, $250 model. They also sell, for reasons no one understands, a $1,300 Chromebook Pixel. That's way crazy. I have that one. It's nice, but it's crazy. But I always thought they should have something in the middle, $300 to $500, that has more horsepower, that's a nicer computer, better screen, higher res screen, and I think that's what these Chromebook 2s are aimed at. And I do think they're fine. You should think about what you're going to lose. So music's one. You don't have iTunes, but I think there's a way around that. The other may be more important, and this only the school will know, will instructors require her to run software? Because she can't. She'll have to go to the computer lab to do that. So if she's taking a computer-aided design course, for instance, and they say, well, you got to have AutoCAD, well, you're not going to run that on a Chromebook. So
right.
that would be one area where not having a computer might be a disadvantage. Is this her first year?
Yes.
Yeah, no freshman class is going to require software.
It's criminal justice, so no
computer. Wow. Well, it might. Now, that's interesting. There may be forensics programs she needs to run. I don't know. Ask the bursar, ask the school or the head of the the criminal justice department what the expectation would be. They may say, we expect every kid to come in here with a Windows machine. They may well say that. But I personally think a Chromebook is an ideal student experience.
Right. Well, we've really liked it for the kids who've been at home. The only thing we had is we had one of the $200 Acers.
Yeah.
Which was a little flimsy and plasticky. Although that got solved when someone stepped on it, so it wouldn't have mattered.
And by the way, that's how Google was advertising it. You remember those early Chromebook ads? They had a dog, and it was the point of it was, this is such a cheap computer, you don't care if the dog slurps on it, because you just buy another one.
Right, and then that's what happened with her younger sister with the home model. Okay, you ruined it. Okay,
I think you'd be very happy with a Chromebook. I've completely come full circle on that. I think schools that are doing one-to-one programs, instead of giving students iPads or laptops, really should consider Chromebooks. They're secure. You can't get in trouble with them. If you do, the power wash makes it easy, and everything's stored in the cloud. So if she wants something more powerful or she comes home, she doesn't have to bring her Chromebook home. She can access her stuff on Google Docs.
The two things Dad is like, there's no support, there's no viruses, there's no stuff.
It's so easy. Yeah.
And the other is if we share a document with one another, either by having two instances where we're logging onto their account, or we do the share a document and I log in the document, we can actually both edit it at the same time.
There you go.
And so Dad has edited an awful lot of high school and college essays with that, while the kid sees what's being done.
I think you nailed it. I think this is a great solution, especially for a family with a lot of kids off to school, and they all need computers. The Chromebook is a great solution. I think a lot of schools, the Chromebook is a great solution for them, too.
They're not touching my MacBook Pro.
No, that's Dad's.
I'm very personal about that.
That's Dad's. Hey, I'm glad you called. Thank you, Jay. And
Thank you, sir. You're
a great dad. You're making it work, and I love that. That's awesome. That's awesome. So thanks to somebody in the chat room who sent me a link to an article from the New Yorker last week. The drones invade Yosemite. Apparently, according to park rangers, drones, these little quadcopters, are the tin can of the 20th century. They're everywhere. They're illegal to use to do photographs or video, aerial photography in Yosemite, but they are everywhere. Acadia National Park, Sheridan Steele, the superintendent, saw his first drone last month when a professor at a nearby college flew one around the park headquarters to demonstrate its capabilities. They're thinking about using them for search and rescue. People are using them to take pictures. So maybe my hairdresser wasn't nuts. Maybe there is a big drone problem in the national park system. This is an article, a serious article from the New Yorker magazine, May 9th, 2014. Drones are everywhere in our national park system. It's becoming a problem. They call it hit-and-run filming. Well, imagine flying around El Capitan, Half Dome, getting those aerial shots, zooming down to the campground. Oh, man, technology, I tell you. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. We'll take a break for your local news and have a lot more coming up. Hour number three right after this. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Good day to you. We talk tech each week at this time. Computers, the internet, smartphones, home theater, digital photography, all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO. More importantly, the website. Remember this. It's how you find the things I talk about, links to the stories and the products I recommend. It's how you find the chat room. Always fun. Lots of great people in there. Nicely moderated, so it's safe for the whole family. It's also where you can leave your comments. If you say, Leo, nobody should, remember our last caller, nobody should buy a Chromebook for a student. You got another feeling about that? You should very much go to the website, techguylabs.com. Last caller on hour two, and you put your comment in there. We love your comments, your suggestions, your thoughts. The phone number there, everything's there. Schedule, stations we're on across the country, where you can get the show download audio or video. In fact, we put the audio and video from that show, plus answers to all the questions there as the week goes by. Again, techguylabs.com. Moving on to David. He's in Leavenworth, Kansas. Hi, David. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome to the show.
Yes.
What can I do for you?
I just bought a new Moto X as my first smartphone.
I love the Moto X. I'm on record. I think it's a great phone. How do you like it?
I like it so far. It's been really great. Interesting. I'm just trying to learn all the features. And a question about one of them. If I'm at home and I've got the cell phone data and wireless, too, and I'm wanting to do surfing or email or whatever, how can I make sure that the wireless is being used instead of my...
If the Wi-Fi's there and you see the Wi-Fi, the easiest way, and I do check this, because sometimes you drop out or, the Wi-Fi's offline or whatever, but I always look at the top of the screen, the notification bar there, and if Wi-Fi is turned on, you'll see the Wi-Fi, upside-down Wi-Fi volcano. That's how you know. As long as it's got Wi-Fi, it'll always use that in preference to cellular data.
Okay, that's what I was wanting to know, if it gets a preference of one over the other.
No, it always prefers Wi-Fi. There may occasionally be some use of cellular data in addition to Wi-Fi. A number of carriers do that. So it's not completely not using cellular data, but it's very, very small amount. So small that you don't care.
Okay, well, I've got this through T-Mobile.
T-Mobile's fine, yeah. In fact, T-Mobile, you can actually make calls over the Wi-Fi. They want you to use Wi-Fi so bad, they'll even let you make calls over the Wi-Fi.
Oh, okay.
That's not in all the T-Mobile phones. I don't know if they put that in the Moto X or not, but that's a nice feature. Now, the Moto X is the smartest of the current crop of smartphones. It's listening to you all the time, so you can say, okay, Google Now, and talk to it. Knows when you're in meetings. It knows when you're driving. If you haven't turned on Motorola Assist, turn that on. That's really handy.
Okay.
This is the first phone I've ever had that when a text message comes in, it'll beep at you as you're driving, because we don't want you looking at the phone. We don't want you touching the phone. So it'll say, you just got a text message from Lisa. Do you want me to read it to you? You say, yes. It reads it to you. It says, would you like to send a reply? You say, yes. It says, all right, go ahead. You tell it what to say. It reads it back to you. Said, I send this? And you say, yes. You didn't look at the phone. You didn't take the phone out of your pocket. You didn't touch the phone. But yet you were able to respond to a text message. You can also have it set up that it says, and if you have kids, this is definitely the setting, I can't talk right now. I'm driving.
That is
the greatest. I think every phone should have this feature. It's such a great feature.
Even set up the notifications where it'll tell me different tones for different notifications
for email
or text.
Oh, yeah.
I know the difference.
That's one of the things I do almost right away when I get a new Android phone, is I make sure that every program has a different tone. So I hear, oh, that's the Wall Street Journal updating in the news. That must be a breaking story. Oh, there's a text message. Oh, I just got an email. So that they're all distinctive. I think that's it sounds like you're into it. You're going to have a good time with that phone.
I'm hoping so. And like I say, another really quick question: is there an easy way to like silence the ringer or something if I'm in a meeting or something where I don't want it to ring?
So Motorola Assist will also do that. It will look at your calendar, and if it sees a calendar entry that has a person attached to it, it won't ring. Or you can tell it what to do. You can. It's the same thing as driving. It can say, I'm in a meeting right now. I'll get back to you. Or you can have it, you tell it what how to respond. The only key on that is it does use your calendar. It will use all of the different calendar entries. But there must be somebody attached to that calendar entry for it to assume it's a meeting. That's actually probably a good way to handle it. What I do is I just add the email. It could be your own email. Or usually I'll add the email of somebody else that's at that meeting. I don't send off an invitation necessarily, but just having their name in that calendar entry means that the phone won't ring. But you turn that on in Motorola Assist.
Okay. That's great.
Yeah, that is a nice feature, I have to say.
That's awesome. I like these nice features. So.
Yeah. No, I think you're for your first phone, I think it's a very good choice. It's just the right size. I think you did well.
Yeah, and I caught it on the one-day offer from Motorola, so I got it on a one-day discount that they just recently had.
Yeah, they've been doing that lately. One of the reasons they're doing that, I'm not going to make you sad here, but is that we probably will see a new Motorola X in the next month or two.
Sure. I mean, that's the technology is always...
Yes, that's the spirit. That's the attitude.
I'm always going to be behind.
Always going to be behind. That's right. That's right. I expect Motorola... I hope Motorola will do a couple of things to make this phone even better. The two things it lacks, it doesn't have a great camera, and unfortunately, it's not really as good as the top-of-the-line phones, the Galaxy S5, the iPhone 5S, the HTC One. They all have better cameras. So I hope Motorola improves the camera. And the second thing that's less important, but I would like to see them do, is the screen. I like the size. 4.7 inches is just right, but I'd like to see higher resolution. It's a 720p screen. I'd like to see a 1080p screen. By the way, if you are an Android user and you want the features of Motorola Assist, Motorola Assist works particularly well on the Moto X because it has a separate low-power chip that's watching for things like driving, attaching to Bluetooth, and listening for your voice. All of that can be done without draining the battery. So those features are unique to the Motorola phones. The Droid Max will do that as well because they have this special extra chip. However, there is a really nice Android app that's free called Agent, Do Not Disturb, that does much of the same thing. In fact, I was complaining because I moved to the HTC One from the Moto X, and one of our listeners told me about this app. It will do many of the same thing. If you're in a meeting, for instance, I'm in a meeting right now. You notice my phone doesn't ring when I do the radio show. That's because it automatically silences itself because it knows my calendar. It knows when you're driving. It knows when you're asleep. It knows whether you've been bad or good. No, it doesn't know that. This is a really nice app for Android. You got to search for it properly because there's a number of programs called Agent. It's from Ego Motion, but the full name of the program is Agent, Do Not Disturb, and more. I do think that what Google/Motorola did with the Moto X is going to be kind of the wave of the future for a lot of smartphones. It's a really nice, really nice phone. Let's see. That was David. So let's go to our next call, which is Mike in Fountain, Colorado. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Doing well. Watching the skies gray up, getting ready for thunderstorms again.
The Rockies game, the Giants-Rockies game had some real thunder bumpers there. They had to put...
Oh, yeah, tornadoes up in Denver and all the rest.
They were telling people to get out of the press box to go down and below, and they're getting people out of the stands. I guess they called that game off yesterday, but boy. Whew.
Yes, it can get nasty out here sometimes. Well, first thing, I'm getting ready to drop some money on both Carbonite and Steve Gibson's Spinrite.
Good man.
Found an interesting thing with Carbonite yesterday, and I think it's probably due to the age of my processor and motherboard. I've got an Intel Core 2 quad CPU, the Q8200.
Yeah.
I was transcoding some videos. Carbonite decided to kick in and do a backup.
Oh, now hang on. I'm going to put you on hold because we got to take a break. But don't go anywhere. We're going to come right back in a second. because I want to help you out here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're taking your calls, talking high tech together. You stay right here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, back with Mike in Fountain, Colorado, home of the tornado. I just heard one. Mike, do you have a tornado cellar? What do you do if a tornado comes through town?
Pray a lot.
Yeah. That's scary.
No, well, the funny thing is, the closer you are to the foot of the mountains, the less likely you are to actually see a tornado.
And you're in the foothills there?
Yeah.
Good man.
It's called the Fountain Valley.
All right.
So most of the tornadoes we'd have in the vicinity would be to the east of us towards Peyton, Calhoun.
That makes sense. They'd be in the open plains area.
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's a little too turbulent down the valleys right in the foothills.
So tell me again, we were talking before the break. You have Carbonite, one of our sponsors.
I'm running the test on right now.
Yeah, and you started doing something that was CPU intensive.
Yes, I was transcoding a video.
And what happened?
Well, Carbonite decided to kick in while my cores all went to 100%.
Yeah. Well, that's not by itself a bad thing, because they're there, and why should they get to rest?
well, that's too.
But Carbonite is designed to be what we call, the actual technical term for this is nice. That is not get in the way of other processes. So generally, Carbonite will wait till you're idle. It won't use more than a fraction of your total bandwidth, things like that, because Carbonite, which is backing up online, is doing that constantly. You don't want it to get in the way. It's not unusual to see CPUs pegged to 100% when you're doing transcoding anyway. In fact, I'd almost prefer that. If your transcoding program, this is, by the way, one of the hardest things your processor does ever, is take video encoded, say, using DivX and turn it into an MPEG-4, that is a lot of processing. And it's almost entirely CPU-bound. That means the speed of it is exactly as fast as your processor can go.
Now, why I'm thinking of upgrading.
Right. But if the processor, if it's only using 50%, it's half as fast as it could be. So I would expect any transcoder to peg your processors. Whether you have Carbonite running or not, I would want it to do that.
Okay.
So that isn't bad. Now, of course, when your processors are 100% occupied, they get hot. So you want to make sure your fans are working, your cooling's in good shape.
Oh, definitely.
Carbonite should, when it sees something like transcoding go on, should just get out of the way. It may be, you know, sometimes programs are looking for certain kinds of activity. For instance, I know it's looking for keystrokes.
Right.
Mouse movements. But when you're transcoding, you're not touching the machine.
No.
You walk away. And it may be it's not or cannot tell if you're transcoding.
Ah.
Because there's no keystrokes or mouse movements. I'll have to ask my friends at Carbonite about that. Clearly that's not the behavior they want or you want. What you want is if you're going to do something that's CPU intensive, that's really getting those processors to do everything they can, you don't want any other process to get in the way. That's what nice means in technical terms. Nice means get out of the way, step back if something else is going on. And,
gotcha. And
Carbonite should always assume that is the lowest priority thing. Carbonite should never be a high priority process. Mm. I don't think it is.
Yeah, what happened was since I spotted that the Carbonite was backing up, I froze it to take it off.
Yeah, and that's why they give you that capability.
Right. Well, it also froze a particular M2TS file.
Oh, did it mess it up?
And then when its system finished transcoding and was rebuilding, it couldn't find the file.
Huh. Oh, I see.
Carbonite had locked it up.
From now, yeah, because it was in the middle of backing it up. See, this is what you really don't want.
All right.
So that from now on, when you transcode, it sounds like Carbonite's not aware of what's going on.
Carbonite first.
Freeze Carbonite, yeah.
Yes, and then I go.
Yeah. It's nothing's perfect. Carbonite does its best job, and of course they are sponsors, and I'm never going to say anything bad about them because I love them. But to be perfectly frank, it sounds like this is one case where Carbonite doesn't do the best job. You should freeze it.
I will.
Yeah.
But I just thought I'd let you know.
Yeah, no, that's good to know. I'll ask him about that. And maybe there really isn't an easy way to tell what you're up to.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry you can't go to London. I lived there for 7 years back in the 70s.
I love that.
I met Prince Philip, actually had dinner with him.
You're kidding.
No.
Wow.
My brother-in-law had taken his commission in the British Army after having been an other rank for 13 years. And Prince Philip was the titular head of his unit, and they had a dining in.
How fun.
And so I was invited along with 250 British officers.
Wow, that must have been something.
It was. He's a very pleasant man, very wicked sense of humor.
Oh, wow. Sounds like he was telling some stories. private stories.
My ex-unit sent me dress mess blue uniform from Germany to attend, even though I was out of the military.
Yeah.
And he spotted the Vietnam service ribbon, and he goes, Vietnam, eh? Didn't do so well there.
Oh, dear.
And I looked at him, and I said, 50-ship Navy? Not much of a Navy, sir.
Ooh, wow. You got into it.
Oh, yeah, and he laughed.
Oh, that's good.
Laughed so hard.
He actually
moved a guy away from the head of the table so I could sit within 3 seats of him.
I'm impressed.
And we told jokes back and forth all evening.
That's hysterical.
He's a wonderful gentleman.
Great gentleman. Hey, it's really nice to talk to you, Mike. The chat room is giving me a link, which I'll put in the show notes. Thank you, Johnny B., where you can where Carmen explains how you can specifically set the Carbonite backup not to back up during certain hours. You can manually freeze it, but if there's a time when you're, you know, usually using the computer, you know, the 4 hours between 7 and 11 every night, just tell Carbonite, hey, don't do anything then. And that'll really keep it out of your way. I think that's probably a good solution. Thank you very much for that link, Johnny B. And thank you for the call and the stories of the Duke of Edinburgh. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Bob in Walnut Creek, California is next. Hey, Bob.
Hey, thanks for taking the call.
My pleasure.
I enjoyed watching you build Twit. In fact, I just got rid of a few months ago the camera you sent me many, many, many years ago.
I remember you. Oh, that's great. I'm glad you got some use out of it.
Yeah, and the you know, one thing I'd like to find access to is the old sound effects, I guess. It's 2 a.m.
I have them all. Isn't that funny? They are not. So what Bob's talking about is, for years, I did this radio show with a man named John C. Dvorak, who was at the time, and probably still is, the world's best-known computer columnist, a real wonderful fella, but he had no attention span. He was easily bored. And a three-hour call-in radio show just was the end of the line for John. So foolishly, to keep him entertained, like a four-year-old, I gave him a set of sound effects, which he would play at the most inopportune moments. But at least it kept him entertained, and it made the show kind of interesting. You know, it wouldn't be bad probably to bring John and his sound effects back. It's funny you should ask about that. I just set up a new backup system for all of my computers, because they're spread out all over the place, both here at our studios and at home. And one of them had the entire set of sound effects, and it was so great to rediscover them, including that famous, the time is now 2 a.m., let me think about how I can get that online so people can download them. I don't own the rights to any of it, so there's that. But it would be fun to have it. Tell you what, I got to take a break. Let me think. We'll talk. I'll answer your question, too, when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, talking high-tech computers, the internet. And thanks to Bob in Walnut Creek, I was able to go through some of those old sound effects and recordings. Bob, did you hear any of those during the break?
I heard them all. I was laughing. I think you should distribute them throughout your Twitch shows. Give each host the opportunity to pick them one by one. They'll go down and choose their favorite.
They're so fun.
I know.
I wish I could have a little box out front of the studios and you could just take a sound effect, leave a sound effect. But I don't own the rights to most of this stuff, so I don't know. I don't know. I guess I could privately distribute them.
Well, you used them on the radio, so.
Yeah, but I never did get in trouble for that. I don't know why not.
Things are different. Well, I guess you saw my question. It's about community internet, which I live in Rossmore, which has 9,000 people over here in Walnut Creek.
Yeah.
And our long-term contract with Comcast is coming due, or going to expire in 2016. And I've been trying to push, as have a few other people here,
good,
for us to own our own infrastructure, take it over, and then, you know, take bids for supplying us. And I've been trying to get, I hear you mentioned Dan Gilmore's name and another fellow who
Bob Frankston is the guy who's extremely active. He's the creator of VisiCalc.
Yeah, I've emailed all the three guys you've mentioned on the show, and none's gotten back to me. So I'm wondering if you have another suggestion on how we could get some intelligent consulting here. And I'm sure we have some money we could pay the foundation. But
so,
I wanted to do.
Yeah, let me explain to people who are listening, because I think this is in maybe the best answer. And this is what Dan Gilmore said. He's a journalist, writer for The Guardian, who said, the best thing people could do is just, with this open internet issue, the FCC and the big companies who are fighting to, you know, control the internet, is for communities to create their own internet. And it really just kind of ends the conversation. It's a public utility, just like, you know, right now you get water from your community. What if the communities put in the pipes or took over existing pipes for internet access, just as they have pipes for water access? And then one way a community could make this financially viable, because we know communities are strapped right now, is to say to commercial internet service providers, we built the infrastructure, you provide for a fee to our citizens the service on top of it. And, you know, it's you could even say, we're going to make it competitive. Anybody who wants to do this can. You charge whatever you want. And if you've got enough people competing with one another, that's going to drive prices down and service up, and it's going to make everybody happy. And the community might even make a little money on it. So it's a wonderful idea. But you're right. It's hard to convince municipalities to do it. I tried here in Petaluma. You have a deal with the cable company. This is how it's been. Even a small place like Rossmore with only 9 or 10,000 people gives the cable company a franchise for a length of time, usually 10 to 15 years, saying you have a monopoly here. Well, their monopoly is going to run out in a couple of years, and so it's appropriate for communities like Rossmore to start looking at alternatives. More than appropriate. It's a great idea. But, boy, getting the civic fathers to, and mothers to do this is another matter entirely. I finally just gave up. I mean, it's scary for them, and I understand why. And then some of the things they'd have to do might be very unpopular. No politician wants to be unpopular. Things like using eminent domain to take over existing internet plants and things like that. There is a website that I would start with, muninetworks.org. Muninetworks.org. They've interviewed Frankston and others. They have a website called Community Broadband Networks. It is exactly about how to, you know, what happens, how do you get a community network created? There are resources here for every business, every town to do this themselves. There are people you can call. This is where I'd start. They're certainly more expert in this than I am.
Oh, great. That's what I needed.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware of that.
There's a podcast you can listen to. There's all sorts of information, and it talks about other municipalities who have done this successfully. And that's really what you need. You need to bring case studies to the Rossmore City Council and say, look, this has been done. This works. We're not inventing something here. You know, cable companies hate it. Phone companies hate it because you're competing with them. But frankly, competition is what we need.
Yep, that's what I'm looking for. Great. If you have a second, I have another question I think
Certainly.
Might be shorter. I'm just wondering if I should get a VPN for my Android phone when I'm using Wi-Fi hotspots. There are a number of them out there now that seem that they finally sort of made it easy to use.
Right.
And, you know, people have always talked about it with your notebooks, your laptops, but I don't hear a whole lot about it, Android phones.
So a security guru would say absolutely under no circumstances should you ever use a wireless network unless all your traffic on that network is encrypted. And the best way to do that is with a VPN, a virtual private network. It encrypts all the traffic coming from your phone or computer all the way to a VPN server, which could be something you run at your home or some provider runs for you. It has to be unencrypted when it enters the public internet. You know, Amazon won't understand your VPN traffic. But the point is that when you're using the open Wi-Fi access point, it is encrypted. It goes through that access point all the way to your VPN providers, who then forwards it to Amazon unencrypted. And so
you know, at some point, everything you do is on the public internet, but you don't want it to be on so public that it's being broadcast throughout the entire coffee shop. And that's what it is on an open Wi-Fi. Now, that's one solution. And there are a great many companies that do this. We have a sponsor, proxpn.com, that does it. It's roughly $5 to $10 a month, depending who you use. You can buy a VPN server that you run out of your house. That's pretty tricky. May violate your terms of service as well with your internet service provider, depending on what they allow you to do. The third option is the one I choose, which is I'm careful what I do in public, but I don't use encryption. So a security guru will say, oh, you're crazy, Leo. But frankly, I also want to consider cost and convenience. So when you're getting email, make sure that your email provider provides encrypted email access. That means you're using HTTPS in most cases. If you're using Gmail, Yahoo Mail, it does. Outlook Mail, it does. That's part of the service. Not only your login, but all the email itself is encrypted. So that's better than a VPN because it's encrypted from your phone all the way to them, to Google or to Outlook or Microsoft or Yahoo. If you're using an internet service provider's email service, ask them, is this encrypted? And if it is, then you're fine. So that's the first one, email. Remember I said the worst thing that can happen is that your email password leaks out. That's a bad thing to have happen. Surfing, if you're using Amazon or a bank, that's always encrypted. That's HTTPS. People will know what you're doing, but, they'll know, oh, he's on Amazon. Oh, he's at visiting his bank. But they won't see the details of the transaction. In my opinion, that's sufficient. The big one is to make sure your email is protected.
Great. Thank you.
Hey, I appreciate the call. More of your calls coming up. Just a second. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time for the tech guy to wrap up this segment. Coming up in just a little bit, our own gadget guru, Dick DiBartolo, with a gadget of the week. And I think I might have time for a couple more calls. I'm really glad to talk about municipal or community internet. I think it's the way out of this whole net neutrality issue. And I think that everybody, no matter what your political stripe, can get behind this, because the reason we need net neutrality is because there's no competition. If there were competing, most people, you've got your cable company and maybe if your phone company, and that's about it. A satellite, but that's not going to work as well. If there were many choices in every community, then we wouldn't have any internet issues because competition would solve it. Unfortunately, these companies have monopolies. So let's provide some competition, getting municipalities and communities offer internet. It is a public utility. It ought to be. So I think this is a good solution. All right, we're going to take a break. More of your calls and Dick DiBartolo, Mad's Maddest Writer, right after this. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, it must be pretty much the end of the show because he's here again. That guy with the white mustache. Wait a minute, let me put my white mustache on. Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's Maddest Writer. I like to dress up for the part. Here we go.
Nice.
Now we match.
Yeah, you get that out of the dryer?
It looks like lint from the the lint collector, doesn't it?
Yeah. Very good.
Your mustache goes down. This one seems to be going up.
Yeah, well, when I inhale, it doesn't suck my mustache up into my nostrils like it does yours.
Yeah, so there's something definitely wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what you get.
Well, it took me years to groom mine.
Mustaches, I'll tell you. So this is called The Hero, by the way, the one I'm wearing.
Oh, that's me.
Yeah. Dick joins us each and every week. He is Mad Magazine's Maddest Writer, a man about town, and a gadget guru. And he talks each week about some cool item or gadget he's found out there in the world.
Well, I know you're heading out shortly, or yes. Maybe you're there.
I'm there. Wherever I am, there I am. No, we're going to Hawaii for the 4th of July.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's not where I am now.
No, okay. All right, well, then I have a gadget that could just work for you.
What is it? What is it? Tell me.
It is from Travelon. It is the anti-theft travel wallet.
Oh. Is this like that stupid purse alarm?
No.
That was the dumbest thing. There was a hook. You get to the restaurant and you...
That's one of my favorite gadgets of all time.
You put the hook on the table and you hook your purse to it. And then if somebody tries to lift it, it goes, weep, weep, weep.
Yeah, right? I still like that.
So this isn't that.
That was from Zelko. That was... I forgot what it was.
Purse hook or something like that.
Yeah. It might have been purse hook. Exactly. Exactly. Yes, because women put their pocketbook on the...
Right.
Tape. Right. And...
You'll see this in bars. They'll have little hooks under the bar for you to hook your purse to. But this one's portable.
Right. But this one does not have a built-in alarm.
No,
the one I'm
looking at right here on Amazon is only $5, but no alarm.
Apparently,
this is a whole category. Here's a search. I did a search for purse hook. It says, buy purse hooks from Bed Bath & Beyond. There's many different kinds.
But the one with the alarm, I guess, is gone.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it didn't sell. Well, what do you got? You got a wallet hook for me?
No, it's not a wallet hook. It is a travel wallet. So a couple things about it. It goes around the neck. There's a picture of it.
Here's the Zelko purse card.
Oh, it's still around.
No, currently unavailable. I found it, though, on Amazon.
Don.
We don't know when or if this item will be back in stock. Oh.
No.
So tell me what you got, then.
All right, so the travel wallet is, you know, it goes around your neck, an adjustable strap. Oh. The neat thing about the strap is there's a wire inside the strap, so someone can't just run up and easily click.
Snap it off of you, yeah.
Exactly.
This way they'll take your whole head with them.
Possible.
That's better.
Possible.
Yeah.
Possible.
Yeah.
Then there's RFID blocking inside the travel wallet. So that people cannot lift ID from your credit card or passport. There's a Velcro closure on the front, but it doesn't pull straight up. When I first got it in the mail, I kept saying, how strong can this Velcro be? I cannot pull it up. And then I figured, well, let me just look at the little hang tag here. And it says, you must push the flap of this wallet off to the right in order to free the Velcro to come up. So that's just a neat little thing that someone in the subway or something's not going to pop it open that easy. And then it has slash-proof nylon, so it's harder for it to be cut while you're still wearing it. And they make two different models. The smaller model also has a belt clip, so you can wear it as a belt wallet or around your neck. And that little guy is roughly 5.5 by 4.5 inches. And that it's under $30 on Amazon.
What's the name, of it?
It is the Travelon Anti-Theft Travel Wallet. And I put links on my site under the tech guide.
Or you could just put your wallet in your pocket.
Oh, yeah, but this carries a lot more stuff than your wallet. For example, the bigger one, the smaller one, there's also a pocket for your cell phone. And the bigger one has a pocket for smaller cameras. All right, so it's $25.
Well, this is the anti-theft neck wallet.
Yeah, that's it.
There's also the anti-theft travel wallet and the anti-theft crossbody bag.
That they make an entire line of them.
Wow. When you travel, do you do a money belt? What do you do?
No, I normally carry stuff in a little... basically, what I do is I give the stuff to Dennis because he has the
So that way he'll get murdered. It's much better.
I just say, hey, yeah. Carry this.
You got all the money. Run!
Exactly. Exactly.
That's smart. I give it all to Dennis. Yeah, why not? Yeah. What the heck?
Exactly. Exactly. No, I like the bigger one because we travel with a little Vado webcam, and that fits in there with a little roll-up microphone.
Why do you travel with a webcam?
Well, not a webcam, a little video camera.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay.
Yeah. Okay. You know, like at CES and the hardware show.
Yeah, that's how you do your one take theater.
Exactly. Yeah. One take theater.
You never know when something fascinating can be shot in blurry handheld video.
Exactly.
You just never know. So I wear Scotty vests. I wear Scotty vest clothing, and that has pockets in the pockets in the pockets, and very deep thigh pockets stuff. I find those. Yeah. I've never been robbed wearing those. Yeah, mostly people run the other way.
Scotty vests are amazing. You can put a ton of stuff in a Scotty vest. And did you send him a video?
Hold on a second. I want to take a break and we can talk about that. Now, also, I want to tell people about the what the heck is it. Dick DiBartolo is here. He is Mad Magazine's baddest writer. The Gizwiz. What were you talking about? Scott Jordan was having a thing?
He asked people to make little videos about what's in your Scotty vest.
See, now I wish I carried around a webcam with me at all times.
Yeah, you see? Yeah. You see? So the first thing I took out was a webcam so I could shoot my own video.
Well, I carry my mustache in my Scotty vest.
Oh, okay.
So if you go to Dick's website, gizwiz.biz, you get a chance to, first of all, see notes about all the products he mentions on this show and every other show. You're on ABC on a regular basis. And gosh, you just get around. Gizwiz.biz. But you can also get a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. He's the What the Heck Is It contest game. Just scroll down. By the way, a Squarespace site. Very nice.
Yes, it is.
Love the Squarespace site. What the Heck Is It contest. If everybody goes there all at once, you'll could see that you can never bring down a Squarespace site. It's a picture of, that's pretty obviously a saw blade, but it's blue plastic and kind of flimsy. So I'm thinking it's a saw blade for something, I don't know, something soft. Chewing gum. It's a chewing gum saw blade.
You know what? I like that. Send that in. I'll give you a man for that.
12 copies for the right answer, but if you don't know what it is, don't worry. There's more. 24 copies for the wrong answer that's clever. Gizwiz.biz, your plan for the August issue of Mad Magazine. Details at the website. Dickie D, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome, pal.
And thank you all for being here. Thanks to Heather Hammond and Nathan Staten, our fine producers. I'm Leo Laporte. I'll see you next time. Have another great geek week. We'll see you. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.